ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय सैव प्रथमं देवः ॐ सर्गमाश्रितः चचार दुश्चरं
भ्रमा
ब्रह्मचार्यम् अखण्डितम् स एव प्रथमं देवः ॐ सर्गमाश्रितः चचार दुश्चरं
ब्रह्मा
ब्रह्मचार्यम् अखण्डितम् सः
दैट
एव सर्टेनली प्रथमम् फर्स्ट देवः सुप्रीम लॉर्ड कुमारम् नेम्ड द कुमारस् अनमैरिड सर्गम् क्रिएशन Ashutah, under, Chachara, performed, Duscharam, very difficult to do, Brahma, in the order of Brahman, Brahmacharyam, under discipline, to realize the absolute Brahman. Akanditam, unbroken. Translation, first of all, in the beginning of the creation, there were four unmarried sons of Lord Brahma, the Kumaras, who, being situated in a vow of celibacy, underwent severe austerities for realization of the absolute truth. And the purport by Śrīla Prabhupāda. The creation of the material world is effected, maintained, and then again annihilated at certain intervals. So, there are different names of the creations in terms of the particular types of Brahma, the father of the living beings in the creation. The Kumaras, as above mentioned, appeared in the Kumara creation of the material world. And to teach us the process of Brahman realization, they underwent a severe type of disciplinary action as bachelors. These Kumaras are empowered incarnations. And before executing the severe type of disciplinary actions, all of them became qualified Brahmanas. This example suggests that one must first acquire the qualifications of a Brahmana, not simply by birth, but also by quality, and then one can undergo the process of Brahman realization. Eva Pratamam Devaha Kumaram Sargamashritaha Chachara Duscharam Brahma Brahmacharyam Akanditam. First of all, in the beginning of creation, there were the four unmarried sons of Brahma, the Kumaras, who, being situated in a vow of celibacy, underwent severe austerities for realization of the absolute truth. This is practically the same place where I left off in Chicago. In the mornings in the Palatine area, we finished the previous verse. This third chapter of the first canto is a response to one of the six questions section that's describing the incarnations of the Lord is a response to one of the questions, because that was one of the questions. Please describe the forms of the Lord as they appear within this world. And so the first set of verses is about the Purusha avatars, because the Purusha avatars don't exist in Vaikuntha. They're expansions of Lord Sankarshan in the spiritual world for the purpose of material creation. And as is indicated in the previous verse, text 5, the Garbhodakshay Vishnu is the source and indestructible seed of multifarious incarnations. So the avatars appear through Vishnu, although the Vishnu Tattva forms of the Lord exist before the creation. They exist before Garbhodakshay Vishnu exists, because he appears for the purpose of creation. It's not to say they exist before is not a chronological statement, but it's an ontological statement, meaning in the spiritual realm everything is eternal, but something being the source of another something in the spiritual realm is a statement of ontology or reality with a capital R. Krishna is the source of everything. Doesn't mean once upon a time there were no living entities, once upon a time there was no matter, once upon a time there were no forms of the Lord in Vaikuntha. Some time passed and then they came into existence. So it's not a chronological statement. That would be a chronological statement. But the energies of the Lord, they're eternal. The expansions of the Lord, they're eternal. But they come from Krishna is an ontological statement. So prior to their descending into this world, the forms of the Lord exist. They appear through the agency of Garbhodakshay Vishnu within this world. And that's what's covered, or the Purusha avatars is the subject that's covered through text 5. And then starting with text 6, a list of avatars are being identified. Here the word pratamam, saeva pratamam devaha. This is the first in the list, pratamam. And the next one is dvitiyam, dvitiyam, and then tritiyam, first, second, third in the list. So the first that Shukadeva Goswami, Sutta Goswami chooses to speak about is the four Kumaras. Even before the four Kumaras is Lord Brahma. So to say first of all, in the beginning of creation, there were four unmarried sons of Brahma. So Brahma is another category of avatar. He's the guna avatar. He's the avatar in charge of the mode of passion. So Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahesh, or Lord Shiva, they're guna avatars. And the Kumaras, as the sons of Lord Brahma, they're another category of avatar. They're in the category of Shaktyavesh avatar. Or as Prabhupada says in the purport, these Kumaras are empowered incarnations. They're jiva souls, but they're empowered with the Lord's jnana shakti. They're known as extremely intelligent, and that's because they carry the Jnana Shakti of the Supreme Lord. They're not jnanis, they're devotees. But they carry the, just as Brahma, he's not just a creator, he's devotee, pure devotee. Prabhupada explains that the different sets of creation, maintenance, annihilation, there's different Brahmas for those different creations. And our Brahma often identifies him, just like when Brahma was called by Krishna to come to visit him in Dwarka. No, he wanted to go visit Krishna in Dwarka. So he came to visit Krishna in Dwarka. But when he came to see Krishna, he had to first pass through the secretary of Krishna. So he came to the gate of Vaikuntha, or the palace of Krishna, and he informed the gatekeeper, "Please tell my lord that Lord Brahma has come to see him." So the secretary went to see Krishna, and the secretary came back and said, "Krishna wants to know which Lord Brahma has come to see him." "What do you mean, which Lord Brahma? Which Lord Brahma? Tell him it's Lord Brahma, the father of the four Kumaras, has come to see him." And while he was waiting for Krishna to be able to receive him, when he came before Krishna, he saw so many Brahmas, some with 8 heads, some with 16 heads, some with 32 heads, some with 64 heads, some with 1,000 heads, 10,000 heads, 100,000 heads. Then he recognized that he could see that he alone was able to see the other Brahmas, but they could not see one another. They all thought that they were coming before Lord Krishna alone. "I am Lord Brahma. I am Lord Brahma. I am Lord Brahma." Who allowed that vision so that he could become very humble before Krishna. Not, "I am Lord Brahma." So, Lord Brahma identifies himself in that way, the father of the four Kumaras. And Prabhupada comments like that in the purport, that there's creation, maintenance, and annihilation at different intervals, so there are different names of the creations in terms of particular types of Brahma. And since the Kumaras appeared in the Kumara creation, so this is called the Kumara creation. Different names. So Kumaras are not always in every creation. So when we read the Bhagavatam and different events are described, the way that our Acharyas describe this is that the Bhagavatam is not just for this world. The Bhagavatam is also for the heavenly realm. And in the heavenly realm, they're much more aware of this diversity. And so, sometimes, the positions of places and the heights of trees and mountains and the duration of lives and so forth, it's in relation to the higher realms, and persons that don't have that understanding take it that these are simply exaggerations, fictitious mythology, and so on. But it's not so. the four Kumaras appeared. Of course, later, the whole thing is described here in the first canto, third chapter. It's just little bullet points. Mention is made of these different incarnations. But they appeared first amongst the praja of Lord Brahma. They appeared first from the mind of Lord Brahma. In the unfolding of creation, as it's described in the third canto, when Mahavishnu casts his glance over the pradhan is the undifferentiated totality of material elements, only they're undifferentiated, and the glance of Mahavishnu differentiates them or separates them into different parts, 24. And of those 24, the first one that appears is the most subtle, and that's false ego. First one to appear is the last thing to go, false ego. And false ego then contacts the modes of nature, starting with the mode of goodness. And the mode of goodness, in contact with false ego, manifests the mind. False ego, in contact with passion, manifests intelligence. And false ego, in contact with the mode of ignorance, manifests the five gross material elements, panchabhuta. And then in turn from the panchabhuta, the 10 knowledge acquiring, the 10 senses, 5 knowledge acquiring, 5 acting senses. And then the objects of the senses in turn. So I'm mentioning this because the mind, it might seem like it should be the other way around. The intelligence should manifest from the mode of goodness and the mind from the mode of passion. But the material world, the element of goodness, the quality of goodness manifests the mind in goodness. So in its higher state, the mind is fixed in goodness. And the intelligence, however, when passion comes into play, then one needs material intelligence to create, to do things, to get things done. And according to the indication of the mind, if the mind becomes in turn influenced by passion, or false ego comes in contact with passion, then material intelligence comes into play to serve the material desires within the material mind. And it's through material intelligence that one creates. That's passion. Say it the other way around. Without material intelligence, you can't create. That element nourishes passion. As nourished by passion, it increases passion and is nourished by passion. So the four Kumaras, they're the bearers of the Lord's Jnana Shakti, and they appear from the mind of Lord Brahma. And because they're in this quality of goodness, they're not attracted to material activities. And one of the principal material activities is the material activity of procreation. And they have no interest in such things. In fact, when Lord Brahma suggested that they take up that service, they declined, which then produced a response from Lord Brahma that he became angry. and from his brow in the position of anger, Lord Shiva came. The guna avatar of destruction, mode of ignorance, is in charge of destruction. Lord Shiva is in charge of destruction. So they maintained their position, lifelong celibacy, or brahmacharyam akanditam. Brahmacharyam akanditam means unbroken celibacy. This brahmacharyam principle, it means celibacy. Prabhupada translates it here as under discipline to realize the absolute. The purpose of, there's many purposes of celibacy, but there's the higher purpose, just like there's many for devotees to become vegetarian. It's not, we're a vegetarian society, we're a Krishna conscious society. We're vegetarian because we only accept food that's first offered to Krishna. And when we can only offer foods in the mode of goodness, and therefore we're vegetarian. And same, this idea of brahmacharya or celibacy is not just that, you know, abstinence for some other purpose other than realization of the absolute truth. Or say it the other way around, that God has a, with creation, there is a God-intended purpose for everything within creation. And the God-intended purpose is the act of sex is there for attracting a soul to take shelter and having that soul then delivered to the spiritual position. So Prabhupada has explained that one who lives by that principle, a grahastha who lives by that principle, is grahastha brahmachari or grahastha sannyas. That's Vaishnava. One lives by the principle of acting in any field of endeavor simply for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. In the case of the Kumaras, it's brahmacharyam akanditam, unbroken brahmacharya, or lifelong celibacy. And that, once again, the principle that's behind that one, that principle, is realization of the absolute. It's connecting all things with Krishna's service. One understands that that's the purpose of life. This human form of life is awarded to achieve God realization. Then brahmacharyam follows, whether it's brahmacharyam akanditam or brahmacharyam or grahastha brahmachari principle. It's for God realization. And Prabhupada comments something that's very interesting. He indicates that before executing the severe type of disciplinary actions, not only brahmacharya executed by the Kumaras, as Bhishma took that same vow of brahmacharya. So that great vow that was just part of the severe type of disciplinary actions, the tapa that they underwent. Chachara duscharam So they committed themselves first, this pratamam. They first committed themselves to realization of the absolute truth. And then, and that was signified by this brahmacharyam akanditam commitment. Then following that were other types of austerities, chachara, duscharam, brahma, that were furthering them on the path of spiritual realization. So Prabhupada's indication is, first comes this spiritual commitment, or first comes the acquiring the qualifications of a brahmana, and then one can follow the path of realization of the absolute truth. Now he's borrowing from this word pratamam, first. So it's two ways. First, he's in a list of many, dvitiyam, tritiyam, and so on. So it's the first in the list. But he's also borrowing strength from that word to say, first, the commitment to brahminical quality. And then the path of realization. In our Krishna consciousness movement, we have our four regulative principles. And following our four regular principles, we have so many other varieties of service. But they're whatever those varieties of service are, it's framed in the four regular principles. And it's the purpose of the four regular principles, minimally, is to situate us on the platform of goodness. Because these four principles are pillars of sinful life if they're violated. Rajas, followed by rajas is tamas. If one eats indiscriminately and takes intoxication and gambles and has illicit sex, it totally destroys, debilitates or destroys the fabric of goodness. But the purpose for us, making the same point again, the purpose for us is not just control of the senses or mode of goodness life. The purpose is to assist in spiritual realization, to assist us to chant the holy name with concentration and effective entering into the potencies of transcendence, the transcendental holy name. The two don't go well together, lighting a fire and pouring water on the fire. So this is a platform, minimum platform of being situated in goodness. Or that's what brahminical life is symptomized by the quality of goodness. Sama dhamma tapakshocham shantir arjanam evacha jnanam vijnanam astakyam brahma karma svabhavajam. The svabhava, the disposition, the character of a brahmana brings forth these qualities. You have a jewel and it sparkles. You have an emerald and it's green. The qualities are resting upon the thing, it's the entity itself. The soul that's in contact with goodness, the swabhava of a brahmana, demonstrates its quality. Sama, dhamma, tapak, shocham, shant. So to help us come to that Brahmana by quality platform, the regular principles are there. And then that assists us, doesn't matter what one's occupation is, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, the four regular principles are required for Vaishnava life. Then one can take up one's Shudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, or Brahmana activity, and then it can be, in its being dedicated to Krishna, one becomes Vaishnava. But these four principles must be there for everyone. So the brahmacharya of the Kumaras, in their case, brahmacharyam akanditam, was first. And then following that was chachara duscharam brahma. The other activities that they did for spiritual realization. So the indication that Prabhupada draws is it's not by birth that one is a brahmana, but by quality. And that quality, particularly in this age, requires training. So one can be trained to be a brahmana by quality, regardless of birth. Just like when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had sent two sannyasis to England, famous little quote that Prabhupada often liked to speak about. Lord Zetland was met by these two sannyasis, and Lord Zetland wanted to know, is it possible that you can make me a brahmana? And they told Lord Zetland, yes we can, but you must follow these four principles. No illicit sex, no meat, no intoxication, no gambling. And Lord Zetland's reply was, impossible. And then Prabhupada's comment, impossible is a word in the Fool's Dictionary. So, but that was the response. Become Brahmana, follow these four principles. Follow these as the qualifications of goodness can be trained. They may not be in the life of the untrained, but in the life of the trained. That's just preliminary, so that one can go further and further on the path of realization of the absolute truth, realization of Brahman, realization of Parabrahman, realization of Krishna. So the context of the Kumaras being the firstborn praja of Lord Brahma is certainly different than our modern context. But the principle is the same. This principle of before executing the severe type of disciplinary actions, all of them became qualified brahmanas. This example suggests that one must first acquire the qualifications of a brahmana, not simply by birth, but also by quality. Then one can undergo the process of Brahman realization. For us, Brahman realization is Krishna realization, or realization of our relationship with Krishna through devotional service. The introduction of our brahminical principles, and following those brahminical principles, there's other brahminical principles. Principles of cleanliness, principles of truthfulness, principles of compassion, and so forth. And through those principles of goodness, combined with, or charged with, and turbocharged with the chanting of the holy name, one can then be brought to the position where one can worship the deity, regardless of one's birth, by the Pancharatrika system of the scriptures, by the changing base metal into gold, by the process of alchemy, one can similarly transform an ordinary person into a qualified person, qualified to perform Vedic rituals, qualified to worship the deity, qualified to study the scriptures and chant sacred mantras, but not without the brahminical quality. So Prabhupada's indication is not the other way around. By birth, regardless of quality, one has access to those elevating activities. Not so. Okay. Any discussion? I've heard different renderings of that question, and none of them are really satisfying. But one statement is that when the loud kirtan of the holy name is heard, it's the echo from the, it sounds like an echo, but it's the kirtan of the trees. The statement is there like that, so whether that's intended poetically or literally. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu traveled through the Jharkhand forest, all the animals, and they were chanting. The dog of Shivananda Sen was chanting. I mean, not just responding to chanting, but he was chanting. When sufficient spiritual enlightenment is there, that's what happens. That's another rendering of that I've heard. But Prabhupada doesn't offer any explanation, just makes a statement. When sufficient impetus is there, all living entities awaken their dormant Krishna consciousness. When Lord Chaitanya discusses with Haridas Thakur, Haridas Thakur says that by your appearance in this world, you've delivered all the living entities. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Haridas, how can you say that? You see all varieties of living entities. They're still here. He said, what I've said is so. You've delivered them all, and the dormant living entities have taken their place. So, in the process of being elevated to the spiritual platform, or to the kingdom of God, they've engaged in kirtan. There's another rendering of the answer to that question. So it's obviously something that's out of the ordinary, extraordinary. By spiritual impetus, the soul awakens. Anything else? Srila Prabhupada.